ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to another episode. Synopsisize me.
Synopsisize you.
Synopsisize.
Synopsisize. So, I'm contemplating it.
It's like doing an exercise and telling a story at the same time.
So the synopsis... Oh my God, every time... Go back down to the bottom.
Come on.
Okay.
So my little cohorse.
Synopsis for this one is a camp counsellor suffering from blackouts finds himself surrounded by murder victims. He turns to his horror music... He turns to his horror movie enthusiast friend for advice and to contend with the idea that he may be the killer.
Friday the 13th, part 17, The High Tension Rise of Leslie Vernon.
Pretty much. So, as I said, I'm a little bit shocked that Chuck Winding and Sam Sykes did not, in fact, get writing credits for this. So this entire film came about due to a Twitter exchange between the two authors.
Mm-hmm.
And
are they actual authors in real life?
Yeah, they're both actually authors, like published authors.
No, that's a different guy.
You're thinking of Chuck Tingle, aren't you?
How did you know that's who I was thinking of?
Because he's also called Chuck and he writes books that I know full well you're aware of.
He writes the saucy gay fiction.
He does. He writes the dinosaur gay fiction and I think this one's like alien stuff. There's probably some other stuff. I've never read any Chuck Tingle, but I do at some point need to read some because I'm very intrigued.
He writes about Galians.
Yeah, basically. So basically, it started out as a Twitter thread between the two authors. And some of the dialogue is pulled directly from that Twitter conversation, especially in the call between Sam and Chuck. Because obviously they named the characters after the two authors. They have on the phone at the very beginning of the film, some of the dialogue is pulled basically word for word from the Twitter exchange. Especially when they're talking about like, oh, are you wearing a creepy mask? Are you covered in blood? Do you have a weapon? All of that stuff is basically pulled exactly from the Twitter thread. Also, the conversation about the final girl.
I think if I'm right, you have to like contribute like 30 to 40% of a script before you get like a writing credit.
That's probably why then.
Which is why like certain people can do like a script polish and then still remain uncredited.
Yeah. But they did get a created by credit, so fair enough. Because they did in fact create the idea that went on to be the film.
Because I'm pretty sure, and this won't be the first time he comes up, I'm pretty sure that's the reason why Joss Whedon is an uncredited writer on Speed. Because I watched Speed the other night, and I knew that he'd written some of it, but I think he basically just came in and like rewrote some of like Keanu Reeves' character, but he didn't contribute enough to get like a credit. It's the same as Diablo Cody, actually, because she, on the 2013 Evil Dead, obviously it was written by Fede Alvarez and Roy Sayorgas, I think is his writing partner.
Mm-hmm.
But she wrote in like a lot of the more American dialogue. But because it was like dialogue contributions, she remained uncredited even though she like did the work.
Mm-hmm.
Which is part of the reason why when they were filming Deadpool and Wolverine, Ryan Reynolds, who's one of five writers on that movie's got five fucking writers, he basically got told, because he was a credited writer on it and he was a member of the Writers Guild during the strike, he couldn't deviate from the script. He couldn't start just like coming up with dialogue on the fly or like ad-libbing, because it would be going against WGA guidelines. So yeah, I can't remember. I think it's somewhere in the range of, I think between 20 and 40% you have to write of a script before you can become credited, which is probably why they have like a story by credit rather than a
created by credit.
Yeah. So yeah, which will be something that will come up in one of our episodes next month when we talk about NBK.
Sure.
So yeah, what did you think of this movie?
It was exactly what I was expecting, and also nothing like what I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. So I kind of got into it, knew it. My grasp of the English language tonight is on point. Knowing that in all likelihood, the character of Sam would be the killer in this situation. I knew it was a whole play on the camp counsellors slasher movie trope. It wasn't as funny as I was anticipating it being. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of expecting more comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because like it's marketed as a horror comedy. The trailer very much puts it forward as a horror comedy, but also the cast they had. I expected it to be more funny.
Mm.
There we go. What did you think?
I don't know if it's because we've watched a lot of stuff similar to this. One movie that is definitely better than this is the movie we're covering for next month's Crossing the Stream, which is The Final Girls. It felt very derivative to me. And I think that's kind of the problem. When you try and do stuff like this, that feels kind of very... There's parts of this movie that feel like fifth generation, like Shaun of the Dead and like Joss Whedon style. Like a lot of the dialogue and a lot of the setup are like, I know he's like not somebody we should be praising anymore because he's a creep, but it feels like this is the kind of, and it's got like Joss Whedon alum in it, like both Fran Kranz and Alison Hannigan. It just feels like when you compare it to, so if you go back to like the mid noughties and look at like the last 15 years of horror movies, when you've got stuff like Tucker and Dale versus Evil, Stan Helsing, what's the other one I'm trying to think of? Cabin in the Woods, particularly, The Rise of Leslie Vernon, Behind the Mask, and obviously The Final Girls, movies that all kind of operate in this, and I guess to a lesser degree, Shaun of the Dead, even though that's a slightly older movie. You've got these films that kind of operate in that, like, wink-wink, nudge-nudge, meta kind of, like, vibe, especially something like Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon, because that's about a guy who exists in the real world and is a serial killer in the real world who's patterned himself after film serial killers, and they do a documentary on him. And some of Sam's mannerisms when he's in, I like the way that it's set up of, like, we know horror movies exist, but he's kind of like a real life killer who's being compared to those guys, kind of felt a bit like that film. And then very much so, like, because this is kind of like, this is kind of like if somebody tried to write a Friday the 13th movie, but they were high and they could only remember like parts of the first three movies.
Mm.
And it's the same as, like, that's how I feel about The Final Girls. However, I feel like The Final Girls, and I don't want to talk about that too much because we will talk about more next month, but I feel like that does the premise a lot more interestingly than what this did.
Yeah.
I also, like, and it's a weird thing to say in a slasher movie, there is not a single character in this movie other than Chuck, a criminally underused Alison Hannigan, that I gave a single solitary fuck about.
Mm.
I did not care about any of these people. And that's one of the weird things. Whether you're writing a comedy, a horror comedy, or whatever it may be, there should always be at least one or two characters that you kind of, like, relate to and want to root for. And, like, you know, even like, the dialogue, like, they're trying to do that, like, Kevin Smith, Joss Whedon type thing of, like, oh, hey, we're horror nerds. Like, look, we can make all these references. Some fictional references, some real references. And it's like, it just even feels like we're at that stage now where, like, that whole thing of, like, geek speak in films that was popularized by people like Edgar Wright, Kevin Smith, Joss Whedon,
mm-hmm.
even that's fucking old hat now. And it's starting to sound less and less like how actual. And I say this as somebody who gravitates towards those writers and those directors because they actually captured how me and my friends spoke in films. Whereas now, again, it feels like somebody's overheard a conversation of people in a comic book shop and then made some notes, but then kind of like forgotten half the notes by the time they got home. They're like, oh, that's kind of how that person talks. So there's not anything fresh, original, or even remotely like relatable about this film.
Mm.
And I just found it very jarring to watch because of that, because I was just like, what is the purpose of this film?
Okay, fair enough. I mean, I feel like you pick this up, and you do pick at this a lot, the whole dialogue thing.
Mm-hmm.
This movie was written in 2018.
Yeah.
Neither of us were young, babe.
Yeah.
And I do feel like sometimes that's part of the problem with dialogue, is that it is written in a way that younger people speak. Once you hit a certain age, it all sounds like fucking mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, like, I could understand that if these people were like, talking about, like, fucking TikToks and, like,
but not relevant just things that, at the though. Time. But, like, if you think about it, is the people who wrote it are probably quite a bit older than ours.
Mm.
And it's kind of aimed at an audience quite a bit younger than
us. Yeah, I get what you're saying. It just feels inauthentic to me. It feels more like movie dialogue rather than real people.
I mean, I didn't get that. But also, I'm not the kind of person who'd have those conversations.
Yeah.
So the way they talk in this sounds exactly to me like the kind of people having those conversations. Okay. So I'm like, yeah, you sound like absolute nerds.
So let me put it to you this way. You've been in a room with me and Greg when we've had these conversations. You were in a room recently with me and my friend Casey when we had these kind of conversations. And you've been around me and Adam when we had these kind of conversations. Is there anything in this film that sounds remotely like any of the conversations,
babe,
that we've ever
it
had?
It all just sounds like mumbo jumbo.
But that's what I'm trying to say.
To
like,
but this is what I'm saying is, for you, who is the kind of person who has those conversations, there's probably bits you pick up on. For me, who, okay, yeah, we have a podcast where we literally talk about this shit. But even now, like, I'm still, if you and Greg get going, I'm like, I have no fucking clue what the two nerds are fucking saying. I'm just going to leave the room.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm out. I'm done. Because especially you and fucking Casey just start talking in quotes. And I'm like, I'm done. I'm out. I've got nothing. I just started talking to Casey's friend. I was like, you're my new buddy now because I've got nothing. No idea what the fuck's going on.
20 years of friendship will do for you.
But do you know what I mean? Yeah. So to me, it sounds perfectly reasonable that that is like legitimate dialogue.
Yeah.
Because it confused me as much as overhearing you talking with your friends.
Yeah.
I was just like, fucking nerds, man. Fucking nerds. I mean, there was some, like, it's a comedy horror movie. Like, because there were parts of it where I was like, you wouldn't be having this conversation in broad daylight in the store you're working at in front of customers. Like, that's ridiculous. That would never happen. Not if your friend's actually killing people, babe.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Today's generation, man.
Well, no, but like Alison Hannigan in this and Fran Kranz are both supposed to be kind of R-age-ish, I'm assuming. You'd be like, oh my God, I'm going to take this call in the back.
Yeah. Fran Kranz Ferdinand.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't like, but I was like, it's supposed to be a dumb, like, that's the whole point of it. It's like the comedy comes from her having these conversations in front of other people going, and them all being like, the fuck? So that was a bit weird for me. But, like, overall, I think a big, massive problem that I have with this movie is outside of Sam and Chuck, you don't really get to know anything about any of the other characters.
Mm-hmm.
Amani was Chuck's summer fling last year at camp.
Summer fling.
Don't mean a thing. And what's her face is the good girl.
Jamie
is the good girl. Like, that's really all you learn. Kayak King is really good with kids and kayaks. That's about all I know about him.
Steve.
Kayak King. The other guy, I will refer to as the one black character.
Brad. There's two black
characters. There's two, Somali is black. But, like...
Brad.
All we know about Brad is that Brad's potentially a bit of a dick and he's built. Like, that's it.
And he wants to sexual Imani. He wants to do sex.
I think he wants to just do sex with any of them, to be honest. I think it was particularly...
There was Drew as well, who had the mum genes and discovered the grave. The wood carving.
I completely forgot about Drew. There is, like, in the cast for this, there is, like, 20 camp counsellors. There's not. There's 11.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all named. They all have names in the cast. I couldn't tell you what happened to any of those camp counsellors.
Do you know who got the best paycheck for this movie and got a screen credit for it? Keith David.
Yeah, because he's
the voice of the cop at the end.
The sheriff at the end of the film.
Like, you hire Keith David to be a voice. He was the voice of Spawn. But still, that's mad. Like, yeah. I don't know how much they paid Keith David to say, like, 10 lines of dialogue into a radio.
They probably just went, oh, Keith, will you do this for us? They're, yeah, sure.
It was probably like a film, like, next door or something.
Probably.
And he just stumbled on the set and they're like, do you want to... It is like a tenner and a sandwich.
Pretty much. But yeah, I think the problem is a lot of the characters and a lot of the deaths in this film are mostly forgettable.
Yeah, they're quite repetitive as well. It's like a lot of like, oh, a man got his head cut in half. Oh, somebody had their head cut off. Oh, somebody like had their legs cut off.
And I do feel like as well, this movie is kind of let down with the fact that last night we literally rewatched Studio 666.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some great and inventive deaths in that film.
I'm saying it one more time. I said it on my X episode. I said it on a Scream 5, Scream 6, and on our Studio 666 episode. Can people just leave Jenna Ortega the fuck alone? Like, every time I see that poor little girl get fucking murdered, like, I swear to God, in Beetlejuice, she just best be hanging around riding fucking bikes, hanging out with Beetlejuice, making model fucking trains. Like, although I say this, she got cut the fuck up in Scream 5, she got attacked in Scream 6, she got murdered in Studio 666, she got murdered in X. And I still think the worst thing cinematically that's happened to her recently is having to have sex with Martin Freeman on screen.
What?
Yeah, there's a film out called Miller's Girl. And he's like a 50-year-old English teacher who like starts an affair with her. And there's like a sex scene. I don't know how graphic it is, but I know that there's a sex scene between the two of them. Because a lot of people when the movie were coming out were like, she's like 21 and he... Martin Freeman's, like, in his early 50s, and they were like, this is a bit creepy.
It's also acting.
Yeah, but it's all about, like, the power dynamic.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, it's really creepy. I'm like, they're also actors.
Mm.
Do you know what happens? It's like, act.
Yeah, but still, that's not a nice day in the office, is it?
No, but you'd have to agree to that before.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they had, like, an intimacy coordinator on set and stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
well, it's the same with Challengers, because Zendaya had to have an intimacy coach for the three-way scene that she has that's in the trailer. And everyone was like, Tom Holland seeing that trailer. And then there's just like the guy, the puppet from Team America throwing up in the alleyway. Yeah, sorry, what were we saying?
I don't know.
Yeah, you were saying about the deaths in Studio 666 being, like, way better.
Yeah, so, like, there's some really inventive and cool deaths in Studio 666. I was specifically thinking about the fucking chainsaw through the bed. Great death.
And also Shiflet's one, where he gets barbecued, is quite cool.
That's quite fun. Like, that's really fun. And I think after having just rewatched that to then go into watching this, I was like, yeah, these deaths are really, really quite fucking boring.
Yeah, and the thing is, like,
I never thought I'd live in a world where I'd be comparing horror movie deaths going, oh, that seems quite boring,
actually. Yeah, but this is the thing, though, like, if you're going to do a horror comedy, like, if you're not going to make your movie funny, then, like, you need to at least, yeah, you need to, like, at least make up for it by making it memorable. I've always said this, like, there are numerous accounts of me saying this on the podcast and in real life. Like, I will forgive a movie for being bad. I cannot forgive a movie for being boring.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at you, Dune Part 2. But you know what I mean? Like, I just... Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking woodcarver as well. Fuck me. Because that's the guy who was like... The woodcarver was the killer that was like the guy who's like haunting the mask.
Oh, yeah, okay. Because
they keep referencing the woodcarver. That's why he's got that shit like...
Wood mask, that fucking makes so much sense.
The one that looks like Loki's mask from The Mask.
That's fair.
Looks like somebody just cut Groot's head off and hollowed it out.
I think what's quite interesting is as well, like, now I know what the mask looks like, is in the actual Twitter exchange, they describe the mask. I'm going to read you what actual authors wrote. Real authors, published authors.
Is this going to be like some E.L. James level
shit? Right, no. Where is it? A wooden mask whose empty eyes drink in the light and whose jagged grin suggests it was carved, forced upon it when it didn't laugh.
Mate, that is a line of dialogue from 50 Shades of Grey.
But, like, that is, like, a pretty... I'd be like, that sounds terrifying. And then you see the mask in this movie and you're like, someone's badly carved a pumpkin.
Joy,
there's not even a mouth, which I think is quite annoying as well. It's literally... It's like the tiki mask from fucking Crash Bandicoot. There's no mouth, there's just some eye holes cut into it. And I'm like...
Does it not have a mouth?
No, it's literally just two eye holes.
I thought it had a mouth.
No.
You sure? Because I was pretty sure that it had a mouth. Because he puts it on the ground and he tries to jump on it. And I was pretty sure that it had a mouth when he jumped on it. I could be wrong. I usually am.
No. Literally just got eye holes.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not even jagged. They're perfectly carved.
Yes. That is some Groot looking shit.
Yeah, I think it's because if you look, the wood itself is slightly indented where the mouth would sit.
Oh, yeah.
And it's slightly darker.
Yeah.
But there's not actually a mouth.
No.
Which is a little bit annoying. I think it could have been way more interesting, a design for the mask. Especially reading the Twitter thread and, like, reading that description. She's like, that does sound like a creepy-ass mask.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got a bit of wood with some eye holes cut in it. All right, then. I guess. I don't think the woodcarver was a particularly good woodcarver. That's all I'm going to say.
He's not out there, like, making fucking... It's not like... What's his name in Popstar? He's not out there like making a fucking poppy out of wood or a baseball cap or a mask. Actually, no, because he makes a mask in Popstar.
He does.
It's a meth. And then they smoke the weed out of the poppy. See? Should have got a fucking Akifa Shaver up in this bit.
They should have. But yeah, I just think, I feel like it had a really great premise and a really great idea.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it drops the idea pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like, I like that quite early on, they bring up the, like, you could potentially be the killer, but then they go straight into, oh, no, you are definitely the killer.
Yeah, that's the problem with this film, is, like, the film is called You Might Be the Killer, and then there's, like, no ambiguity.
Literally about 20 minutes in, they're like, you know, you're definitely the killer.
Yeah, there's, like, no ambiguity to who the killer is.
No.
And they tried to do, like, they kind of tried to do, like, the high tension thing, where they're like, he is the killer, but he doesn't know he's the killer because he's possessed by the mask. Obviously, in High Tension, there isn't a possession. Spoilers if you haven't seen High Tension, by the way. But yeah, like they play up the whole thing of him not knowing that he's the killer. And it's like, you know, That's really... Like, they kind of do it at the beginning of Idle Hands, when, what's his name? Devon Sawa's character kills his mates and kills his parents. And he's like, he doesn't realise that he's the killer. Mm. But I feel like it's done way better in that movie for the limited amount of time that they run it. But yeah, they genuinely drop all ambiguity or all, like, fucking notion of, like, who the killer is, like, really, really quickly.
Yeah, and I do feel like a smarter move at the end of a film would have made him not the killer. Like, he... So keep all the memory shit, like, he's seeing it happen, mm-hmm. but then, like, at the very end of the film really reveal that it was actually Imani the whole time.
Yeah.
And he just happened to be at the site of each murder and witnessed it happening.
Or go full fucking, like, high tension with it and have Chuck be the killer. And he thinks he's on the phone to her, like, the whole time, but it's not. He's actually had a mental break and he's imagining the calls in his head and she's actually been there killing people the whole time. Like... You with a premise that's kind of like this gimmicky, you have to either really, really lean into it and like just be as outlandish as possible,
or like you just Chuck need to dial it back a bit. Being the killer, or alternatively, Chuck being the reason he ends up possessed in the first place, would have been great.
Yeah, I feel like you don't put Alison Hannigan in a fucking movie and stick her on the poster in an outfit that she never wears in the film, side by side with him, and make you think that she's going to be integral to the film if you're then not going to use her properly.
And she's only shot for 2 days.
Yeah, I'm not fucking surprised. She probably had not... Well, to be fair, what was this? 2018, this came... So this debuted in, what, 2017, I think it came out. So they would have been filming this in, like, 2016.
It came out in 2018, babe. I said that to you.
Well, you know, because on the Wikipedia page, it says that it debuted at a film festival.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm just I was trying to figure out timeline-wise whether she just did this on a fucking day off from How I Met Your Mother. But I think How I Met Your Mother ended, like, way before this came out. But, yeah, I'm not surprised she only did 2 days. Because she's only in fucking one location.
Yeah.
Like, literally... in one location for the whole film.
Mm-hmm.
Feels like a waste of time.
It does. It felt like a massive waste of having her there.
Yeah.
Like, the concept's really cool. Like, I do like the idea of, like, you being stuck in a camp, unsure as to whether or not you're the killer, and having a friend, like, ringing your friend to get them to, like, talk you down.
Mm-hmm.
And then being like, are you covered in blood? And you're like,
And, like...
Yeah... Is it yours? I don't know.
And, like, the other thing as well, like, when he's in the barn at the beginning and he sees the footsteps, like, they could have done that a lot more before the reveal.
Yeah.
They could have done a lot more of the, like, him thinking that he's seeing the killer from, like, outside.
But in reality, it's not. It's the other camp counsellors trying to kill him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To stop him from killing them.
Yeah.
They could have played with that way more.
Yeah. Which I think, again... The movie has a lot of great ideas. You could tell this movie was spawned from a fucking Twitter thread because it feels like a stream of consciousness. Like, it feels like a conversation that you have with your friends when you're, like, three beers deep mm-hmm. on a Friday night in the pub. Like, it feels like that. You know, everybody sits there, like, everybody who's a fan of something has sat there and had those conversations, whether you like wrestling or films or video games. Everybody's had that thing of, like, dude, wouldn't it be cool if, like, this happened and we have this idea and then you spend 3 hours talking about it and then you just forget about it the next day?
From everything I understand, is it didn't even start out like that. It literally started out with one of them just tweeting out saying, yo, can you help me? And the other one responding. And then it just went into the, like, I don't know. I'm out in the middle of nowhere because my camp counsellor. And it just became like a whole...
Were they actually friends before this? Or did they become...
I don't even know if they're friends. Well, I don't know if they're friends now. I know very little about them. I only know... Because I know Chuck Wendig, I only know because he wrote the Book of Accidents, which was very popular for a little while. Yeah. Horror
circle. I mean, the only reason why I ask is because I'm like, is it just... Was it something where it was like, literally like what I just said, where it was two friends bullshitting and it got out of hand? Or was it somebody just put something out there and then, like, a rando, like, fucking replied? And then that was what kicked the whole thing off.
Sam... I forgot what his surname is now.
Oh, are Sam and Chuck two dudes?
Yeah.
Huh. I assumed one of them was a woman because of, like, the Alison Hannigan thing. But
Sykes. No, both men.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because if they were...
I think it was just like a Twitter thread. Like, it was just they were both on Twitter.
Because that's kind of crazy if they didn't even know each other beforehand. Like, that's genuinely, like, mental.
I can't get into any of this stuff because a lot of it's on Twitter and I'm not logged into Twitter on this phone.
Yeah. Imagine that, though. Imagine, like, not even knowing someone and accidentally, like, spawning a film just because you were bullshitting around on Twitter. Mate, I've got to get better with my tweets. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so basically he directly atted him. So Sam Sykes tweeted directly to Chuck, basically saying, yo, can you help me out? And it stumbled from there. But I don't know how much it was, like, planned. I don't know. I don't know if they're friends.
Yeah.
Outside of that.
That's kind of fascinating.
I don't really know, especially I don't know a lot about Sam Sykes. Only thing I know is that his mum is the author of Outlander.
Fuck. What, the Scottish fucking thing with the geezer from the Celine Dion movie? Fucking hell.
Of the actual book series, not that. And I know there was some controversies around him a couple of years ago.
Oh.
But other than that, I've never read anything he wrote. Like, I don't really... I know he no longer has his publishers, let's put it that way.
Oh.
Yeah.
He did a naughty, did he?
He did a naughty.
Wow.
So, but that's, like, all I know. I only know his name, basically, because I know there was, like, some...
Controversy.
Controversies. And if we know anything about me, is I love a book controversy.
You do. Yeah, it is a real shame that this movie is a collection of, like, ideas with, like, nowhere to go with them. Because Fran Kranz has given it his all. He's putting in the work, he's putting in the shift.
I am slightly disappointed as well, having read to the Twitter conversation, that he didn't take out more of the Twitter stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole bit of the conversation where, like, they're discussing whether or not it's worth killing the other three and leaving a final girl with the potential that he may in fact get killed, or if he should just maybe kill two, because if there's two leftovers, then the final girl wouldn't then be a final girl because there's two survivors. Mm-hmm. It's also a whole bit where he's like, oh, you know, me and the mask are just like friends. Like, we're on the same wavelength.
Yeah, see, that shit should have been in the film.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? And it's just quite funny. And yeah, the Twitter thread kind of ends with him going, so you know, he said about me only killing two people. I may have killed three. And he's like, where are you? He's like, you wouldn't shed. There's gasoline coming through the door. Mm-hmm. And they set him on fire. And the end of the conversation is he's like, well, if it works out how we think it'll work out, I'll see you again in 2 to 3 years. Obviously, the joke that there's always a sequel. Mm-hmm. They come back and the conversation ends with, I'll see you when lightning hits your grave, bro.
Yeah, because they make a lot of references like that in this. They make references to, like, a lot of, like, Nightmare on Elm Street, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Halloween. They make a direct reference to Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives, with the lightning hitting the grave. There's a Psycho reference in this.
There's a bunch of references so much stuff in this. I do like, though, like, now I've sat and thought about it after ending the film, that ending bit where he rings Chuck again 2 years later makes so much more sense when you think about the fact that Killer always comes back.
Yeah, because he's now an undead counsellor.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, fuck's sake. Because Jamie gets the mask, kills him, drops the mask and walks off.
No, she takes the mask with her.
She takes the mask with her and she walks off. And then, yeah, he's all like, ah. And I'm like...
Yeah, he rings Chuck and he's like, hey.
She's like, goddamn.
I like, it's an ending joke, though, because, like, it does play on the fact that Killer always comes back, which I do think is quite funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
But obviously, at this point, he's no longer the Killer because he doesn't have the mask anymore.
He might not be the Killer.
He might not be the Killer.
But he might be.
But he might be.
Who dat?
The man behind the mask.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really think there's much else to say about
this movie. I feel like it's a little bit of a nothing film. And I feel really bad for saying that because I was quite excited to watch this one. Because I'd seen the trailer and I was like, this should be fun. But I do feel like they just don't put enough time into developing any of the characters outside of Chuck and Sam. And even Chuck and Sam are still very one-dimensional. Mm-hmm.
Cham and Suck.
All we know is that Chuck is in love with Sam. It's wildly clear.
And she owns a comic book shop called The Rings of Saturn.
Yeah. Or she works there, one of the two.
Yeah.
It's not really clear on her position within the staffing structure of Rings of Saturn.
Yeah. Is she one of the rings? Is she Saturn?
No one knows.
So, do you have any more? Do you have any final thoughts on this one, Anna Score, so we can wrap this up?
I don't think so. I think I've said everything I could really say about this film. I am very disappointed. I feel like it could have been a much better film. Score-wise, I don't think it was dreadful. I just don't think it was good. But also, I think it was very forgettable, which is, like, the worst sin. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give it a 1.
Yeah.
And that's only because Alison Hannigan didn't phone this in, even though she definitely could have.
Yeah. I mean, I'm inclined to give it, like, a 1.5. I think it's a lot of, like, very... I think it's like the film version of me. A lot of wasted potential and a lot of like threads all pulling in different directions with like nowhere to go. It could have been funnier. It could have been like more interesting. There were so many different avenues they could have taken this. And it feels like somebody took a Twitter thread and knocked out a script in a day when they could have like really developed the idea into something interesting. And we could have been talking about it in the same breath as films like The Final Girls and Tucker and Dale and Behind the Mask and Cabin in the Woods and like all of these other films that it clearly takes some form of inspiration from. And in a weird way, this also kind of feels like it could easily be a Grady Hendrix book.
It does.
Like, when I was watching, and then like we know how like Grady Hendrix adaptations go because fucking My Best Friend's Exorcism was one of the worst films I saw.
They're doing a horror store, is that like?
Yeah. I mean, horror store, I understand, because walking around IKEA is a fucking nightmare. Like, it fucking sucks. I hate IKEA. But, yeah, like, there is an element of this where you're like, did Grady Hendrix write this? Because that guy fucking rules. Because aren't they turning the Final Girl support group into a TV series?
I believe so, yeah.
That should be dope as hell. But yeah, I'd be inclined to give it a 1.5. I was thoroughly uninterested while watching this movie, and like for a movie that should have been entertaining, for me to be like not fast says a lot about it, about the state of it as a film. So yeah, that's our thoughts on You Might Be the Killer. Join us on Monday when we're going to be looking at the 2006 British horror film Severance, featuring your boy Danny Dyer and probably some questionable Danny Dyer accent work
from us, not from Danny yeah. Dyer.
So yeah, as always, thank you for your continued support, guys. Follow us on social media, SIMAHFpod on Twitter @/X, So I'm Married Horror Fan, all lowercase, all one word, on Tumblr and Instagram. And you can follow us individually on Letterboxd @Zombie_Simon and Leighton Lawliot.
You didn't do the meanwhile Letterboxd review.
Oh yeah, no, I didn't. I'm saving that for our main reviews. I'm saving it for the main reviews.
Fair enough.
So yeah. As always, guys, stay spooky, stay safe, take care. Goodbye.
Bye.